The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Taiwan's government is on high alert as China just ended its third day of military drills near the island.
The action China is taking is said to be in response to recent meetings between the U.S. and Taiwanese officials.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, happy Easter. It is good to be here with you today. He is alive. He is risen. And I'm getting ready for just a grace-filled Easter week, of course, culminating on the Great Feast of Divine Mercy. We'll talk to you much more about that. If you're praying the novena to Divine Mercy, I will lead us in day four coming up here in about an hour. All right, so never too late to join. Make sure you tune in for that or have somebody else who needs prayer join us. Hey, a lot going on, right? I mean, so much to talk about today. We'll talk about the proof of the resurrection, evidence of it. We'll take a look at the shroud. We'll dive into a lot of really fascinating aspects of what we believe and whether or not there is evidence to help support that, or if it's simply a matter of faith. But before we get to that, again, I'm troubled by what's happening in the world, and I really call you to prayer. On Good Friday, the House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, met with the Taiwanese president. They were in California, and just, I don't know if you remember back when Nancy Pelosi, she was House Speaker then, she went to Taiwan last year. China was not happy about it, so they made it known. They did all these drills. They flew over Taiwan, you know, saying to, giving a sign to America, basically saying to America, hey, Nancy, you shouldn't do this, right? Well, China wasn't happy. They made it known then. Well, the day after McCarthy's meeting, the Chinese military began 3 days of drills. Now, listen to this. They were even rehearsing an encirclement of the island. That's according to the Daily Wire. Now, the Taiwanese Defense Ministry said that 45 Chinese warplanes entered the island's air defense identification zone on Saturday. Numerous, Chinese Navy ships, I think there were 11 of those, and even more planes were spotted on Sunday, and the state media claimed the aircraft were armed actually with live weapons. I saw some news footage over the week, and they were interviewing some people in Taiwan, and they asked the people, do you think America is going to come to your aid? And most of the people that at least I heard said, no, we don't think so. You know why? They saw what happened in Afghanistan, how we left. Will we come to the aid? I don't know. The French president, Emmanuel Macron, coming back from a visit from Beijing, said it would do Europe no good to get involved between a conflict between China and Taiwan. See, here's the mess, and we can get into this in greater detail. They're going to dive into it tomorrow with some lieutenant colonels. Article 5 of that NATO charter, right, says an attack on one is an attack on all. What if there was a standoff between Taiwan and these Navy ships? What if it sparked a war? What if China decides I had enough with the U.S.? We're going in. Does the U.S. do what we are doing now in Ukraine, just arm Taiwan? Or would we eventually send U.S. troops? I mean, Taiwan is very critical to U.S. interests. Here's the thing. I mean, the philosophy right now is that they use this term porcupine. They want to make Taiwan prickly. So China doesn't want to go in, right? They want to arm it. They want to make it a very difficult endeavor for a Chinese invasion. I think the rest of the world is like, we want nothing to do with this. We don't want to spend any more money or any more blood. And when you have French President Emmanuel Macron, I saw the footage of him with Xi Jinping. I mean, they gave him they rolled out the red carpet for him. He comes back, and what do we hear after meeting with Xi Jinping? It does Europe no good to get involved in a conflict between China and Taiwan. And what he's pushing for now is a strategic autonomy. So he wants the EU to decrease its alliance on the U.S. They decrease its reliance, I should say, not alliance, especially on the dollar. This is what concerns me. A little bit later in the week, I'm going to talk about China and Brazil wanting to get away from the U.S. dollar. If the world abandons the dollar, I don't see it happening in the immediate future. It is real trouble for us as Americans. It's going to be really, really difficult for us as a nation. And when you've got the president of France coming back and saying, hey, to all of the European neighbors, to the EU, we should really decrease our reliance on the U.S., especially on the dollar and its military might. We got to increase our own defense spending. That's good. Let's have them do that, right? And we got to keep out of getting dragged into a conflict that we have no business in. In some respects, I don't blame him. If I was France, maybe I'd feel the same way. But he also wants France to increase its influence in the world political discussion, including Ukraine. But Moscow's rejected that idea, saying France is too involved to be a go-between. And Emmanuel Macron likes to think of himself as a great diplomat, as you can see. So we'll see how this plays out. Again, I say this to you all the time. Let's just pray. I'm concerned about the future of our dollar. I am concerned about the rise of China. There was a mystic in South America who I knew. Her name was Maria Esperanza Medrano de Bianchini. And she told me back in 1993, 1994, when I was with her, she had a beautiful painting of China, all these Chinese people, the yellow race, she said. And there before it was the Virgin Mary. And the Virgin Mary had these beautiful rays coming from her hand. And I asked her what it was about. She said that the yellow race will rise up. And she says the only thing that protect the world, and again, this is not in any way, I'm not talking anti-China, we're talking the CCP, we're talking communism here, right? And the evils that often come with that. The Chinese people, fundamentally, are good people. They're an oppressed people, really, if you think about what's happening, in China right now. It's one area I would not want to be in. Showed that we have to turn to Our Lady, just as we did with Russia. We need to turn to her for her intercession. And she is so key to this formula. She's so key to all of this. I had to get my hair cut earlier this morning, right? So I run out, and the girl who cut my hair was a Russian. She's living now in the States. She married a naval guy. And I said, hey, what are you hearing on the what are you hearing from your friends back there? Or do you watch Russian news? She goes, I don't listen. I don't watch the news. I wouldn't sleep. She goes, in Russia, you hear one thing. Ukrainian news gives you something else. But my friends did say that Russia was talking about maybe giving up some of its territory to China, on the eastern side. So on you've got the European side, you've got Siberia in the middle, then you've got eastern Russia. Now, Russia's huge, and the landmass of that nation is unbelievable. I think they cover 9 time zones, something like that. I mean, maybe more. I mean, it's a pretty large swath of land. But, if Xi Jinping comes over, does he want something in exchange? Maybe, and I'm just ruminating here. Does he want something for support? I don't know. She doesn't know either. I mean, she had no idea. But I just found it funny that she said that's what she had heard on their news. That was Russian news. I don't know. We'll put our finger on that. My producer, Tom, had said he had heard something similar to that not too long ago. But I think the only solution is this. I decided on my drive into the studio to pray the rosary specifically for world peace. And I'd ask you to do the same thing. Every day, pray the rosary for peace. Father Rocky prays it at 7 p.m. You can join him. You can join me in about an hour. Every day, I pray at 3 o'clock. One of my intentions is for peace, because the Lord told St. Faustina, the world will have no peace. It'll have no peace until it turns with trust to my mercy. We need to invoke God's mercy in these situations. Here at home, Clarence Thomas, right? He's a Catholic, Supreme Court Justice, constantly coming under attack from the left. For all kinds of supposed, violations of the law. You've got AOC, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's calling for him to be impeached. Really? AOC wants Clarence Thomas impeached on the basis of a report that came from ProPublica. You probably heard about this over the weekend. It says that the justice spent time with his friends, Harlan and Catholic Crow. These people are billionaires. They're very close friends with Justice Thomas and his wife, Virginia, and the Crows have flown the Thomases to their home. They've sent private jets, right? Hosted them on their yacht. And what ProPublica tried to do is make this look like it was a situation of undue influence and the justice not reporting these gifts. And the Supreme Court just last week put forward a new rule that justices have to report gifts of private jet travel. There's no rule about having wealthy friends, right? In fact, Justice Breyer is reported to have taken more than 200 trips, and he was on the bench. So we'll see what ultimately comes out of this, but another attack on the justice. Several people have written about this on both sides. In fact, I had just heard a very liberal radio station. I tried to listen to all sorts of radio, conservative, liberal, Catholic. The liberal station, boy, were they were hammering him on this one. So we'll see what happens. We'll continue to follow that story. But there's I think it was a journal article this morning. I forget where I saw it. Somebody made a big case saying, hey, this is a big nothing burger. So, again, attack. The mass shooting at Covenant School in Nashville 2 weeks ago may seem like an anomaly in terms of attacks on church, but it's not. It was only the bloodiest attack. I don't know how much of you followed about this. I just heard reports of another Louisville shooting. We'll pray for that during the chaplet. I said to somebody this morning, I said, I never heard of more trail derailments and shootings in my life than I have this year. It's crazy. Every time I turn around, it seems like every week I'm talking about this. You know, the Family Research Council or Center, the Family Research Center, they were reporting that so far this year, assailants have attacked churches 69 times. Look at how early we are into the year. Okay. That's as of March 31st, 69 churches. You can't chalk that up to be an anomaly. Sometimes, oh, it's one, it's a sick person, it's somebody with a vendetta. 69 churches have been attacked this year. Compare that with 24 such acts during the same period, right? Last year. And it just gives me pause. I've often made this connection to what happened in Rwanda before the genocide took place. And I think there's lots of reasons for these attacks, but I also think there's a real aggression from the evil one today. And boy, he hates our Lord, and he hates anything that represents holiness, right? Hates it, just hates it. We're looking at, in these, first three full months, a 288% increase, almost 300% increase. The Daily Signal reports the rising tempo of these kinds of assaults, which includes arsons, churches are being set on fire, bomb threats. There's been vandalism. There's been sacrilege. That has affected worship in now 29 states. There have been 53 incidents of vandalism, 10 suspicious fires, 3 gun-related instances, and 3 bomb threats, including a pipe bomb recovered outside of Philadelphia's St. Dominic Church. And again, just to put an exclamation on this, right? This is up to March 31st. The day after that, April 1st, a statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe was smashed at Corpus Christi Church in Corona, California. Terrible. The vandalism occurred around 11:30 p.m. on the Saturday before Palm Sunday, and the vandal apparently was caught on security cameras. It was a male walking up to the statue and just tearing it down, knocking it down and breaking it. So again, we have to pray for those who persecute us as well. It's really unfortunate. I do want to talk also a little bit about a news report that my colleague Mary Graham had reported on, and that's what's happening with Walter Reed canceling this contract with Catholic chaplains. I mean, you've heard, right? We've talked about the vandalisms, the attack on the faith, attack on churches. And maybe, I don't know how you read it. You know, I don't know, maybe you think it's not a big deal. Maybe you're grown desensitized to it. If one took place, I thought it would be too much, right? This, as I said, happened to a Jewish synagogue, and I don't want to see that happen, or to some sort of Muslim mosque or some other place with almost a 300% increase. There would be investigations, right? There would be outrage. What is it about Christians that can be punching bags? You know, what is it that this is okay? And then let's take it out somewhere else. Let's talk about what's happening in the military. You know, when you've been admitted to the hospital, you know, when you know you need a Catholic chaplain, maybe your loved one was dying, right? You wanted a priest to come to the bed. If they're there to give you spiritual comfort, no matter what you have been admitted for. But when you're in the hospital because you're a member of the military and you're hospitalized, let's say because of war wounds, well, that's a completely different level of spiritual and psychological pain. Having a chaplain in that kind of setting, I think, is a necessity. I think it's absolutely essential because it raises all kinds of spiritual and even existential questions for wounded veterans. Was my time overseas worth it? You know, was this battle or this operation just? Why was I trying to kill my fellow man? Why were they trying to kill me? What about my buddies who died? Why am I still alive and they're dead? I mean, just think of the things that go through so many of these people's heads, right? It's tough. You need somebody like a chaplain to help you work through these spiritual and psychological issues. So it came as a complete shock to the Archdiocese of the Military Services when Walter Reed National Military Medical Center has issued a cease and desist order to Holy Name College. That's a community of Franciscan priests and brothers who provide pastoral care to service members and veterans at Walter Reed. They've done this for a couple decades now. So, look, this needs to be looked at, not just a headline in a news article somewhere. I think we need to understand what's happening here, and that's why I've invited Elizabeth Tomlin, who serves as general counsel to the Archdiocese, for some perspective on it. Elizabeth, thank you for joining me.
No, thank you for bringing attention to this important issue.
To me, it's stunning. Was there any forewarning that this was going to happen? Did it come out of left field? Fill us in. How did this all unfold?
Sure. So what happened is the Holy Name Franciscans have held a contract with the government to provide Catholic pastoral care at Walter Reed Medical Center for decades. And that contract, as periodically does, came up for rebid, and it was awarded to a secular defense contracting firm at the expense of then terminating the contract with the Franciscans. And so the Franciscans, recognizing that Catholic pastoral care is absolutely essential, as you were saying, to service members, veterans, their families, the Franciscans were volunteering their services to make sure that Catholic pastoral care was being provided, since a for-profit secular defense contracting firm obviously cannot provide a Catholic priest to Walter Reed Medical Center. And the medical center gave the Franciscans a cease and desist order asking them to stop their services, alleging that the new Catholic or that the new secular defense firm was providing Catholic ministry, which they cannot and they are not.
Did Walter Reed give any reason after they did this for why they did it? What was their reasoning?
So our understanding is that this defense contracting firm's bid was deemed superior to the Franciscans' bid. We don't have any detail as to the factors that were considered other than dollar amount, but we were told that the totality of the bid was better than the Franciscans.
So, I'm sitting here thinking, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, the hospital gave the contract to a secular company. How in the world can a secular company do what only a Catholic priest can do?
Correct. It's illogical. So the Archdiocese for the Military Services has canonical jurisdiction over any service member and their family members on a military installation in United States government employees working overseas and several other types of people. And so the Archdiocese is the only archdiocese in the world that has the authority to provide Catholic priests to serve the needs of these people, specifically at Walter Reed service members, veterans, and their families. And so a secular firm absolutely cannot, first of all, employ a priest. A Catholic priest can't work for a secular company to provide the services of a Catholic priest. The Catholic priest is responsible to his bishop, in this case, Archbishop Broglio.
Yeah. So, you know, can a Catholic priest go there and minister to patients despite the contract being withdrawn? I'm assuming they can, but then again, maybe they can't.
So what Walter Reed has said is that if a patient were to invite the Franciscans to come and minister to them or their parish priest, then the priest could go and minister to these people. But what Walter Reed has turned on its head is that the government, under a very famous case out of the Second Circuit, Katkoff versus Marsh, the government has the responsibility within the Department of Defense to provide for the religious exercise of service members. And that is done through the military chaplaincy, which is augmented when there aren't sufficient chaplains of the denomination to meet the needs, such as in the Catholic Church right now. We don't have sufficient active duty priests. Those essential required services are augmented through these contracts, through priest contracts. And so it's one thing for Walter Reed to say that a patient can invite their parish priest in. Well, yes, obviously. But that turns the responsibility on its head. The government has a proactive responsibility to provide for the free exercise of service members, not just a reactive here.
That's so true. So, you know, just in terms of the scope of this, is this simply targeted at the Catholics or are we seeing this with, you know, Muslims or Jews or Protestants as well?
So that's a good question. What we're seeing is that government contracts related to pastoral care or ministries such as music ministry at a military chapel, religious education coordination, those contracts with increasing frequency are being bidded on by secular for-profit contractors. And then these secular for-profit contractors want to subcontract a church pianist or somebody to fill in the role. And we're seeing this across denominations, but it particularly affects Catholics with regard to clergymen, because clerics are responsible to the bishop of, to the bishop, in this case, Archbishop Broglio. So some non-denominational Protestants or evangelical Protestants, for example, they might not have a problem with a minister being a subcontractor or a minister because their church doesn't have the hierarchical structure that ours has. And Archbishop Broglio is responsible for the pastoral care and sacramental care of the faithful within his archdiocese. And that's not a duty that he would ever delegate to a secular for-profit, nor could he.
I'm concerned because I'm wondering if this is going to happen at other military installations. Is just Walter Reed, or is this soon going to be everywhere that we see Catholic servicemen?
So it has happened in recent months that these contracting firms have bid and won a priest contract, and then they call the archdiocese, often my office, asking for a recommendation of who they can hire to fill the contract. And our answer is nobody. You will not be able to fulfill the contract.
Right.
But this is the first time it's come up in such a large environment that requires multiple priests to meet the needs of the people. And regarding a community, the Franciscans, who have been such a long established, continuous source of pastoral care and the sacraments. So this is a new iteration of a problem.
Wow. Well, we'll continue to follow it. I'm grateful for your time, and let's pray for our men and women who so heroically serve our nation too, that they have the care, the pastoral care that they certainly need. Elizabeth, thank you for what you do. I'm grateful for your time.
Great.
Today.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Elizabeth Tomlin. She is general counsel to the Archdiocese. It's great to have her here with us. Again, this is a shock to the Archdiocese of the military services. Maybe you have a loved one. Maybe you're just hearing about it. These type of stories seem to be continuing, don't they? More and more. We've got a lot to get into coming up here as well, just at home. Abby Johnson is going to be stopping by in a few minutes. We'll get her up and we'll talk to her. I had just saw another story that I thought, man, I cannot believe what we're now seeing. You know, we knew that abortion on the federal level was in trouble, right? We knew when Dobbs was leaked and the decision came out and Roe was overturned that, the battle would continue more on the state level. Just heard a story today, and it looks like abortion is going to be on the fast track back to the Supreme Court. And this is a big, big story. There was a 67-page decision by a federal judge to roll back the FDA's approval of that Mifepristone. Is that what it is? Mifepristone. These chemical abortions, too. I was talking to somebody about it this morning. I mean, it's quite often they fail. Women end up in the hospitals anyway. It's really quite tragic. We'll give you the latest on that. And then the defiance of the rule of law. I had seen a story this morning as well. The head of Health and Human Services is the secretary. There's a guy named Xavier Becerra. And he said that on Sunday, that ignoring the federal ruling against the FDA's approval of this drug, that's on the table. And he asked whether the Biden administration would recommend the FDA ignore such a ban. And Becerra, you know what Becerra said? Everything's on the table. The president said that way back when Dobbs decision came out. Every option's on the table. But think about this for just one moment, right? Okay. you don't like the FDA's ruling, so you're going to ignore it? What if you did that with the FAA? And you said, fly at any height you want. Fly at any elevation. Forget these FAA rules. Everything's on the table. We don't like it. I mean, that's the type of insanity that we're seeing here right now. Hey, in a moment or two, Abby Johnson will be here. I'm going to take a short pause right now, but when we come back, we'll talk with her. And, of course, you're more than welcome to join me. You can dial in 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Of course, the Chapel of the Divine Mercy is at the top of the hour. Day 4 of our novena will continue. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Real faith, real talk. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It is a delight to be here with you today. We'll pray the chaplet in about 30 minutes. Can't wait to do that. And of course, Abby Johnson is stopping by. Before we talk to her, let me just very quickly tell you about her book. It just arrived. Maggie, you'll have to check this out. Abby Johnson, Tyler Rowley, To the Full, True Stories That Reveal the Dignity of Every Human Person. The book is called Life to the Full. Life to the Full. We'll talk to her a little bit about it. I do want to touch on this one issue very quickly. I just want you to be in the know, really, on this, what's happening here. And again, I call you. I'll say it to you. You're sick of hearing me, okay? Say a prayer every time you hear a story like this. Every time. It doesn't have to be a whole long, doesn't have to be a rosary. Just say a prayer. Say, Jesus, have mercy when you hear stuff like this. Ask God to intervene. You know, many people thought that when the Dobbs ruling took place and it overturned Roe, that would be the final major court battle on abortion, right? We'd be fighting more on the state level. That's not the case. And I've been following a story here where, actually on Good Friday of all days, a federal district court judge in Texas, he ruled that the FDA acted illegally when it approved mifepristone as a drug for abortion. So this is a case that's been in the works since 2000. I think the Alliance Defending Freedom was involved in this. They basically said the FDA ignored the petition their client submitted for years on end. Doesn't surprise me, does it? So the ADF's clients allege that the FDA never studied the safety of the drug under the label conditions of use, and they ignored the potential impacts of the hormone-blocking regimen on developing bodies of adolescent girls, that they disregarded the substantial evidence that chemical abortion drugs cause more complications than surgical abortions. Can I stop you on that point? And we'll get Matt, we'll get Abby's take on it. I think that's so important. It's not clean and simple. It's not private. It's not harmless. Chemical abortion drugs cause more complications than surgical abortions. That's stunning. And they go on with a number of other things. They talk about eliminating necessary safeguards for pregnant girls and women who undergo these regimens and a whole bunch of other things. The judge put out a 62-page opinion, and they said that they said this, quote, the FDA acquiesced on its legitimate safety concerns in violation of its statutory duty based on plainly unsound reasoning and studies that did not support the conclusion. So very shortly after that decision, a federal judge in Washington state issued a ruling requiring the states to continue to allow these pills. So that sets up a conflict, and guess where it's heading? More than likely the Supreme Court. It's already on the fast track as the Justice Department today announced that they're going to appeal the Texas ruling. And they also asked the Fifth Circuit of Appeals to allow the drug to continue to be dispensed while the case is appealed. If they choose not to do that, the DOJ will ask the Supreme Court to do it. So I'm here for perspective. Somebody who knows the industry better than anybody's Abby Johnson. She's the founder of And Then There Were None, an organization that promotes working in the abortion industry. And for those who want to get out of their jobs and ultimately find something better, and if you are one of those people, please check out her website, okay? It'll change your life, and it'll be the best decision of your life. Of course, you know her from the movie Unplanned, from many of her books. And she was a former Planned Parenthood clinic worker, and she joins me right now. Abby, thank you so much for being here. Always a delight to have you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I don't know. Maybe let me start with your reaction. What do you make of this? I had heard that the Health and Human Secretary, the head of him, Xavier Becerra, basically said, they're just going to ignore some of this. Give me your take on what's happening here, both at they're going to ignore the FDA's warnings. This may go all the way up to the Supreme Court. Give me your take.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Drew, I feel pretty conflicted by the whole thing. There's, a lot of people in the pro-life movement who are saying, oh, this is a victory. Chemical abortion is now no more. Women aren't going to be able to access chemical abortion. That's simply not true. So I think there's a lot of people that really just don't understand the nuance of chemical abortion. They really don't understand the drive of abortion facilities to commit these abortions through medication. So now basically what has happened is, and what people need to understand is, chemical abortion is a two-step process. It requires the first pill, mifepristone. It doesn't require it, but right now the FDA approval guidelines is that a woman takes the mifepristone, the first pill, which is now under a stay. So women will not have access to that pill, that mifepristone pill. And then they go home and they take the misoprostol pill. The misoprostol is what actually causes the contractions of the uterus, and the woman expels the baby at home. Misoprostol-only abortions have been done all across the world for many years. Mifepristone is not a pill that was even allowed to be used in many, many countries, many European countries. It was not allowed in Mexico, wasn't allowed in Canada for many years. So this is not going to stop abortion facilities from providing chemical abortions to women. They are just going to do misoprostol-only abortions. They will do them without the mifepristone. Now, this misoprostol-only abortion regimen is significantly more dangerous to women. It causes women to have babies alive. So the mifepristone is what actually kills the babies. So now babies are going to be aborted alive. I'm not sure that this is the victory that the pro-life movement thinks it is. We've got to get out of the idea that we're just regulating how we kill babies. That's not really the business that we want to be in. The business that we want to be in is to stop abortion, period, and to change the hearts and minds of women.
Wow, unbelievable. Let me do this. My guest is Abby Johnson. I'll take a call or two for her. I only have her for a few minutes today, so if you want to join us, the number's 888-914-9149. You can get in now with your question and comment as we are taking a look at a developing story that I think is going to be big news in the days ahead. Marie's in Wisconsin, Abby. She's got a question for you. Hi, Marie.
Hi, Abby and Drew. Hi. I've heard the claim that the abortion pill is safer than Tylenol. What is this claim even founded on?
All right.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually have an email in my inbox right now from NARAL that says the subject line, safer than Tylenol. So basically right now in the United States, everything that we look at, all safety recordings, safety protocols are basically looked at based on ICD-10 codes. So those are the codes that are put in from medical providers, from hospitals, when they're going in they're recording incidents. And so there are currently no codes for ICD coding when it comes to abortion complications. So if a woman comes into a hospital, to an emergency room, and she is hemorrhaging because of a uterine perforation, because the doctor poked a hole through her uterus because of an abortion, there's not an ICD-10 code that says hemorrhaging because of abortion, uterine perforation, or uterine perforation because of an abortion. So it's just coded as uterine perforation, or it's just coded as hemorrhage. If a woman has an infection, she's septic because of an abortion. It doesn't say septic because of abortion. It just says sepsis. So in the United States, we actually have no idea how unsafe abortions are. We don't know what the percentage is. And so that's why we get these faulty kind of statistics where they'll say, oh, abortion is safer than childbirth, right? Abortion is safer than taking a Tylenol because we don't have accurate statistics. But when we look at countries that actually have, you know, socialist healthcare, right, where they have universal healthcare like Finland, Norway, countries like that, what we do see where there's accurate reporting is that medication abortion has a 20% severe complication rate. So we're talking about hemorrhage, sepsis, potential fatal complications, 20%. That is pretty significant. So we cannot rely on the statistics that we're seeing here in the United States.
Wow. Well, Marie, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate that. I saw a stat, Abby, that said chemical abortions make up nearly half of all abortions. Chemical abortions now.
Right.
Even the Supreme Court would come down, even if they did come down on the right side of this issue and ban the pills, that wouldn't necessarily eliminate the problem. Would chemical abortion stop? And what do you see happening? I mean, would they come up with another drug? I mean, I just don't know how this is going to play out.
Yeah, I don't, even if the Supreme Court, which I do believe this will make it up to the Supreme Court, but even if the Supreme Court did decide that mifepristone is a drug that should not be used for, should not have FDA approval, it doesn't mean that they won't use it off-label. They were using mifepristone off-label for many, many years before it had FDA approval. So they could continue to use it off-label, number one. Number two, it does not mean that they won't use misoprostol only for abortion procedures. Let me also add this. Taking mifepristone away from the abortion pill regimen also removes our ability to utilize the abortion pill reversal regimen. So in order to utilize the abortion pill reversal, a woman takes the mifepristone, that first pill, reaches out to the abortion pill reversal hotline, then we flood her system with progesterone, yeah. And that's what saves the life of her baby. If they do a misoprostol-only abortion, there is no way to reverse that.
Wow.
So we're also looking at removing the ability to save lives through the abortion pill reversal if they do strike down permanently this mifepristone usage. So that's my conflict, Drew, is people in the pro-life movement are saying, oh, this is so amazing. This is such a victory. But I'm not sure that they're realizing the unintended consequences and the repercussions of this stay on the drug. We want medication abortion to be gone, period,
amen.
Because 54% of medication abortions, 54% of abortions are being done through medication, and they are four times more dangerous than surgical abortions. We don't want babies to die through medication abortions. We don't want babies to die, period. We don't want women to be passing their babies into their toilets at home and having to relive that horror over and over and over again. We want medication abortion to be gone, period. We don't want to just say, oh, well, you can only kill your baby through this type of medication abortion and not this type. So that's what we really need to be fighting right now.
Now, you know, in your book and the film, you went through this yourself, and I know it was depicted not at full strength, but in Unplanned. How many women suffer because of this the way you did? And, you know, maybe you can speak to ultimately what you went through and the reality of that. I mean, I almost hope Congress or somebody can hear a testimony like yours or other women, what they've gone through, and something can be done, or state. Yeah, you know, I don't know who we speak to about this. I don't know how we get the message out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are here, and then there were none about to. We're very soon going to launch a campaign talking about the experiences that we have witnessed, the things that we have seen as former abortion workers.
Awesome.
You know, medication abortion, just the things that we have witnessed as former abortion clinic workers, and even our own experiences with medication abortion. Like you said, I've experienced a medication abortion. It was one of the worst experiences of my life. I bled. I passed clots the size of lemons for 8 weeks. It was horrifying. I had never had a child at that point in time in my life. I did not understand why I was going through such terrible pain. I had nothing to compare it to. Now, looking back, I realized that the pains that I was experiencing, they were actual labor pains because I was passing my child from my womb. The difference is that at the end of this experience, I passed my child into a toilet. I didn't have a child to hold in my arms. And then you have to make this decision based in panic. What do I do with my child? Do I scoop my child out of the toilet? Do I flush my child down the toilet? What do I do? And, you know, the bulk of these women, as did I, you flush your baby down the toilet. Then you have to live with that decision for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And nobody's talking about the emotional ramifications of this. You know, the fact that women who have abortions are 6 times more likely to commit suicide. They're more likely to have eating disorders, depression, anxiety. These are the things that we need to be talking about, that we need to be warning women about. It's not just the physical complications. Yes, there are physical side effects, but more often than that, there are emotional side effects that women don't even recognize. They don't even realize because people aren't talking about that enough.
Well, Abby, keep up your important work. I mean, we're so grateful for your witness and for all that you're doing on so many different levels. I think your next campaign will be overwhelmingly successful. And in any way I can support it, let me know. Abby Johnson is the founder of And Then There Were None. That website is just simply attwn.org, And Then There Were None. So just use the initials and check it out. Abby, thank you. Thank you for being here. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Of course. Thank you, Drew.
Thank you. That's Abby Johnson, former Planned Parenthood Clinic director, subject of the film Unplanned. If you've never seen that, you may want to check that out. We'll take a short pause. We'll pray. Of course, a chaplet coming up at the top of the hour. And that chaplet, the very birth of it, came rooted in a plea for God's mercy, especially against the sin of abortion. We come back, we'll talk a little bit more. Stay with me. Hey, if you're in the market for health insurance, well, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective health plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/Forester.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, I can't wait to pray for you. Day 4 of our novena. Leading up to the great Feast of Mercy, the Lord had specifically given St. Faustina particular intentions to pray for. It's really the only novena that I'm aware of that the Lord himself dictated those intentions to. Pretty cool stuff. A little bit later today, we're going to lighten it up a little bit, okay? What we just talked about is deep, man. It's pretty heavy stuff. I want to talk about the evidence of the resurrection. You know, there's aspects of the death of our Lord and his resurrection to me are just amazing, especially what happened on Good Friday, right? And talk of the dead rising and walking the streets, right? What about an apparition of Jesus where 500 eyewitnesses saw him? We kind of scuff over that. What evidence do we have of the resurrection? Is there proof that Jesus rose from the dead, or is it simply a matter of faith for you and me? We'll talk about that coming up right after the chaplet, and a little later we'll talk about the Shroud of Turin. Let me give you a little precursor of the Shroud of Turin. I personally believe, and I've prayed before this. I remember kneeling in front of the shroud, and the priest who was standing next to me was Father Seraphim Mikulenko, and he says, "Drew, if this is indeed the burial cloth of Jesus, this cloth soaked in his blood," he says, "then we are doing adoration. His precious blood soaked it right there." And I was like, wow. And you could feel a presence there. I remember St. Faustina, when the Lord appeared to her, he appeared to her on, it was February 22nd, 1931. It was one of her first apparitions, and he came radiating this beautiful light. And if you ever saw an image of Divine Mercy, that's how the Lord appeared. He was visible. These rays of light were pouring forth from his heart. They were brilliant. And he gave her a message, and he said to her, he says, "Paint an image according to the pattern you see with the signature, Jesus, I trust in you." And the Lord says, "I desire that this image be venerated, first right here in your chapel, but I want it venerated throughout the world." So St. Faustina went to her mother superior and to her spiritual director, Father Sapochko, and they got a painter to try to illustrate you know, what she saw. Faustina says, "I can't do this. I can't draw," right? So they got a painter, And he could never meet with her expectations, right? She got so frustrated with him. Every time she went back, it wasn't right, right? And of course, he was getting frustrated with her, right? You know, hey, I'm doing my best here, right? And I often thought about that, because how could you ever capture the beauty of the Lord? Those who have apparitions, who viewed Our Lady or Jesus in an apparition, they say there's a beauty beyond words. You can't describe it, that there's a radiance, there's a love that pours forth from them. How are you going to capture that with a paintbrush, right? So Faustina felt that the image wasn't close, was nowhere near the magnificence to what she saw. And she wrote this in her diary. She said this. She says, I felt very sad, but I hid it deep in my heart. When I left the artist's house, I went to the chapel. There she went before the Lord, and she just cried. She wept a great deal. And she said this to the Lord, Lord, who will paint you as beautiful as you are? And then she heard these words. They were strong. They were clear. They were beautiful. They were the words of the Lord. And he said, my daughter, it's not in the beauty of the color nor of the brush that lies the greatness of this image, but in my grace. He says, I am offering people a vessel with which they are to keep coming for graces to this fountain of mercy, and that vessel is this image with the signature, Jesus, I trust in you. He said, by means of this image, I shall be granting many graces to souls, so let every soul have access to it. So I reflected on this, and the Lord has such a strange way of making connections. Why did St. Faustina labor so long trying to get it right? And why did she finally say, okay, the image was acceptable? Little side note. And I've shared this with you in the past. If you're new to the program, it's great to have you. But I found this fascinating. I wrote about it in my book on Divine Mercy. Faustina was never pleased with the image. But one day after the artist repainted the face of Jesus, he repainted Christ's face for, I think it was the 10th time. She came to the studio and announced that Jesus said to leave the image in the state it was. Right? And she quoted the Lord. I mean, this is one line in the diary that I always grapple with because I kind of find this hard to get my head around. She quoted the Lord saying, it isn't good, but it will do. You don't have to change it anymore. Woo! That's something else, right? Throwing some shade back. He said, yeah, he certainly was. Hey, you know, maybe he could have done better. I don't know. Why did the Lord say that was good enough? It will do, right? Why? It was because by chance in 1996, an image of the Shroud of Turin, you know, was printed from those 1931 photographic plates. And it was placed just by chance on top of a comparable size poster of Divine Mercy. This was the image that hangs in Vilnius. It's the Divine Mercy image. And when those two images were laid over one another, and it was unexpectedly backlit, they revealed a startling, absolutely startling coincidence. What they discovered was that in both images, there is a corresponding distance between the pupils of the eyes on the image and the shroud. The nose, practically the same length. The way your lips form, right? Those lips on the shroud and on the image of Divine Mercy, identical. The way they form, the mustache and the beard are the same cut. The hair falls at the side in the same way. In fact, the outer line of the hair on the head is identical. A lot of other type of connections. And they all point, you know, all these point for almost practically a perfect correspondence between the two faces. So perhaps the Lord, this is what I think, perhaps the Lord wanted to communicate a message to us about how powerful both of these images are. He says, by means of this image, I shall be granting many graces to souls, so let every soul have access to it. He says, I promise that the soul that will venerate this image, now listen to this, you should have a Divine Mercy image if you don't have one. I promise that the soul that will venerate this image will not perish, I promise it victory over its enemies already here on earth, but especially at the hour of death. I myself will defend it as my own glory. Now, so many stories of miraculous protection from the image of divine mercy, right? So many. This is such a gift. If you have an image, get it blessed this coming Sunday on Divine Mercy Sunday. I was telling Maggie about that. She's got one sitting on her desk, and I'm like, make sure you get it blessed on this day. And I'll talk much more about that later in the week. I don't have time for it now, but I'll tell you what the Lord said about that. But there is a connection between the image and the shroud, and I see God's fingerprints all over it. When we're done praying the chaplet today, we're going to talk about the resurrection, but then we're going to spend some time talking about not just the Shroud of Turin, but also the face covering of Christ as well. There's some fascinating history. There is some fascinating science behind all of this, and I think you'll find it really intriguing. If you miss anything, you can always hit our podcast. You simply go to any place a podcast is housed, right? You can go to relevantradio.com. You can go to Apple, wherever you like to download them. But listen to this and share it with others, all right? Chaplet is straight ahead. If you want to join me, I definitely take five calls. I try to get 6, 7, 8 maybe in, and you can try to get in right now at 888-914-9149. We'll take your prayers and your intentions on Twitter as well. That's at Drew Mariani Show.